on today's Compassion Radio.
And they were steering literally in the middle of the night toward lighthouses. And if anyone knows anything about a lighthouse, they're put
the
in places
place
you
go.
Do not want to go. They are far away from the safety of beaches or harbors.
Oh.
They were like beacons to people who never knew how to sail. Like, if I just go to the light, I'll be safe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where those shipwrecks were happening, where some people were drowning, tossed out of their boats in bad weather.
Hundreds of people.
Yeah.
Intrepid.
When God tells you to go, then everything works out. He provides.
Involved.
It is so exciting to see what God can do. And this is why there is so much hope.
International.
Compassion Radio allows the listener to get involved in projects that are going to change history.
This is Compassion Radio.
From the Greek Isle of Lesbos to your own backyard, you've tuned to the daily radio ministry journal known as Compassion Radio. And we've got our whole crew together today. Bram?
Jimmy, Cher, welcome back to the studio today.
I want to welcome you back to the studio today. You've been out doing fun things that we want people to hear about.
That's right. Studio of real life for me for the past few weeks.
And that's now, the best one.
It's been about 10 really intense days traveling around the Mediterranean and visiting with some new partners and finding out more about what's happening with the refugee crisis in the eastern part of the Mediterranean. Now, you know, it hasn't been in the news much recently, but I've been finding out from the folks we've talked with that the refugee crisis is not abating one bit. We needed to find out what was actually happening there because this month we're going to be focusing more and more on the issues of refugees and taking a kind of a creative spin on the issue and ways that we can actually help. So that's why I went.
Okay, Bram, back up just a little bit and remind our listeners what kind of refugees you're talking about. Where are they from? Where are they coming? What issue is it that we're dealing with here?
Well, the refugees that I met on this trip were pretty much from all over the Eastern Hemisphere. I mean, it was kind of stunning to me that when you go to a refugee camp in Greece, you expect to hear about Middle East refugees coming out of Syria, out of the war zone there. Wherever ISIS is still active, people are fleeing from them. And that's what I expected. But when I walked in, I found out that these smugglers, the people that have capitalized on this market of misery, pretty much attracted a world's worth of refugees to the west coast of Turkey. Mm-hmm. And so by the time I got to this refugee camp, they had and already had serviced about maybe 100 different nationalities at one time in the past year have gone through this camp. And while I was there, I saw at least, I think, 14 to 15 different nationalities, probably as many languages, if not more, that were all competing for space in a very small area. It was a real cacophony, and I was kind of stunned that this many different kinds of people from Central Africa, from Middle East, from the steppes of Asia, from other parts of Eastern Europe that are having trouble economically, more like migrants than refugees, were all colliding together in the same place.
Okay, now, people will remember the boatloads of people that were coming into various beaches. Rafts overloaded with hundreds of people, people drowning, the little boy that drowned on the beach. I just want to bring back to mind those pictures that we have ingrained in us that we saw on the news for so long. And then, of course, stories shift. And we'd heard about that for a while, so we went on to some other new crisis. But it's still going on. People are still coming. And explain, Bram, why that's an easy place for refugees to try to come. Not that it's always easy for them to arrive, but why it's so overloaded with people trying to get there.
Well, it's a lot easier to go across a smaller sea than it is a giant ocean, for sure. And you're right about things shifting. I mean, right now, of course, America is up to their ears in issues after the hurricanes. I mean, we're rescuing our own people from Puerto Rico, from I still hear on the coast of Texas, we've got hundreds of thousands of people out of their homes. That's not going to slow down for a long time. So attention.
It's Virgin Islands as well.
Yes, exactly. And a number of other islands that aren't even being mentioned at all in the news right now because they're so overwhelmed with the news from one place where the reporter can actually get into.
Exactly.
So, of course, when the cameras shift, then, of course, our attention goes to the next new thing. But as we've discovered in the years we've been on the road for Compassion Radio, the news and the needs do not change just because a camera shifts its focus.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that we are always focused on issues of refugees and conscience is because so many of the Christians of this world are wrapped up in all of this conflict. And even in the heart of America, we have to be very sensitive to the fact that all around the world, our Christian family is in dire straits.
Exactly.
And many of them coming to these islands of eastern Greece are getting there because it's the shortest channel they can get across, and because there's actually an international demarcation line out there in the sea, where if they can just get across it and get into the territorial waters of Greece, that's part of what they call the Schengen Agreement. Now, those countries that are part of that agreement constitute the core of the EU. And EU has ironclad refugee status laws guaranteeing the safety and welfare of those who can make it on shore. Kind of like what we were doing back in the 1980s with the Cuban boat lift. But that is being tested to the very limits. And that was one of the reasons I wanted to go, because the people, as you said, are still coming. Now, during the time we were there, we expect there to see a trickle. You know, people have been saying on the news, reporting it as fact, that things have slowed down dramatically, that it's just a trickle coming into Europe now. I hate to break it to you, but that is far from the truth. I mean, across the street from our hotel in the little town of Mytilene, which is the eastern big city on the island of Lesbos, there was 2 days' time, well over 300 to 400 new refugees that arrived on that quay.
Just in that one place.
In that one place across the street from where we were staying. Now, what they were doing a couple of years ago was trying to beach themselves as quick as possible with borrowed, begged, or stolen boats to get across the channel. And then the smugglers got in on the action and discovered that there's a real business to be built here. So they stopped stealing boats or using old ones and stopped sending them directly to the beach, because people that were commandeering these boats didn't know squat about how to man these boats on the high seas. And they were steering literally in the middle of the night toward lighthouses. And if anyone knows anything about a lighthouse, they're put
the
in places
place
you
go.
Do not want to go. They are far away from the safety of beaches or harbors.
Oh,
they're supposed
awful.
To keep you away from these things. But they were like beacons to people who never knew how to sail. Like, if I just go to the light, I'll be safe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where those shipwrecks were happening, where some people were drowning, tossed out of their boats in bad weather.
Hundreds of people,
yeah.
Yes.
And so of the hundreds and thousands that died on the sea during that first year or so of the boat lift coming out of Turkey, the smugglers actually did one humane thing. They figured out if we just put them in rubber rafts, it'll be cheaper for us, and we give them just enough gas in the motors to get them across the international line into territorial waters for Greece, then the Coast Guard can come pick them up. So they were set adrift out there in the sea. It sort of worked for a while, but people were being left on the ocean for, you know, days at a time, undiscovered. And then the smugglers realized, oh, if we just text them in the rafts the numbers to call for the international aid agencies and for the Coast Guard, then they'll at least be aware that they're out there and they can take care of business, and we can go on to the next load of refugees that we need to ship out. Now, of course, this is big business for the mafia, and they are the only people that are able to help anybody get out of the country at this point, because Turkey has shut down their borders officially, but they're not shutting down the mafia. And the countries in the West are not officially welcoming any refugees in through any official capacity. But once you cross that line and you are in Schengen territory, then you have to be, by law, welcomed in. So it's one of those, if you can get that last mile here yourself, don't ask, don't tell. You get here, we'll take care of you. That was the attitude. So these people are being shoved, 50 to 60 people, into these rubber rafts, kind of like a cheap version of a Zodiac boat that the military would use for beach landings.
Mm-hmm.
They shove them off there, and then the smuggler jumps off the raft after about 100 yards and swims back to shore and puts the rudder in the hand of somebody who does not know what they're doing and just yells at them, point toward that light over there, whatever, go. And so off go the refugees across the international line, and of course the engine conks out. Then a couple hours later, someone will get a call from a smuggler saying, call this number, you'll be rescued. And so they eventually do that. And for the most part, the Coast Guard is much more efficient at keeping people alive. So they haul the people out of the rafts, they cut the rafts up, bring them to the shore, and then they ship them off to the last remaining refugee camp left on the island. Now, the reason that the government is saying that the camps are no longer needed and that their refugee flow has gone down to a trickle is so they don't have to face the reality, the fact that hundreds of people are still coming ashore and they would be obligated to build more refugee camps.
And it's all ingoing into the camps and not outgoing from the camps, too.
And as I watched it happen, this camp was rated for 150 to 200 soldiers. So it was an old army barracks that had been converted into a refugee camp. They had rated it with the UN capable of housing 1,500 refugees.
Mm.
It's an area that's less than 8 acres, and it had, at the time, only like one barracks and one jail and some open area for some tents. With the crowding and the problems with heating and dealing with a winter, they had a lot of fires that would happen in tents. The winds would kick up things and knock over lamps, just like the old Chicago fire problem. You know, knock a lamp over, start a fire, the whole camp burns it down. It happened twice in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And people died from monoxide poisoning, all kinds of things happening in this crowding of the tents in areas where we get down well below freezing in the wintertime, even though it would stay very hot during the summer. So that was the reality for the refugees over the past 2 years. They were supposed to be processed and moved on to other transitional housing and then have their cases heard. They have two color stamps. One was a red stamp, one was a blue stamp.
Thank you for tuning in to today's edition of Compassion Radio. Just wanted to let you know that in case you missed part of today's program, or any of our shows for that matter, you can listen back at any time that's convenient for you at CompassionRadio.com.
If you got the red stamp, you were stuck on the island until someone decided otherwise. The blue stamp, that was your golden ticket. Mm-hmm. You were allowed to actually travel within Greece. If you could find a place to go, they would move you on shore on the mainland and get you in transitional housing and then get you in the pipeline to be resettled somewhere. That would take up to 1 or 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you've made this journey across an ocean in a raft you don't trust. Most of the people that are coming across now can't swim. They never learned how to in the desert. I mean, it's very uncommon for someone from the Middle East to even know how to swim.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time they get there, they're in these camps. They discover that the housing situation on the island is really abysmal. They're free to walk around the island, but they're not free to leave. So it's kind of an open prison. And while we were there, the camp had been shown to be able to accommodate those 1,500 people. Then they had to figure out a way to accommodate 2,000 people. And then they had to figure out a way to accommodate 3,000 people. And then they had to figure out a way to accommodate 4,500 people. So by the time we were there, they were pushing past 4,700 on their way to 5,000. Why the number keeps going up? Two reasons. One, there's no outflow. The EU and the Greek government just shut it down. There was nobody to hear the cases. There was nobody to adjudicate. And there was nobody to help arrange transport to move them out of the camp onto the mainland or do anything with them. And the second reason was the seas were flat. The weather had been very, very calm, and people know that the winter's coming.
Mm-hmm.
So the boats were coming even faster. So I watched bus after bus pulling these refugees out of the water off these cutter boats and moving them 10 miles up the road to the camp. And then we would follow them up to the camp and watch what happened as they went through intake and got processed and assigned to a portion of a tent. Now, you've got the problem of unaccompanied minors traveling, which could be anybody from like 18 years old down. You've got young families, you've got adult young men, adult women, all kinds of combinations of people from different language groups, from different countries. Where do you put them all? They were constantly in a state of flux trying to figure out how to juggle the people they currently had in ways that would be accommodated comfortably enough that they wouldn't suffer, but safe enough that we wouldn't cause problems between people groups or expose young children or women to a sort of exploitation. That wasn't easy. So the kids would go out there and play in the streets up and down throughout this camp. And it's a very steep little piece of property. So 8 acres of a very tall hill with different levels. And each one of the sections of the original barracks is double walled with like 12-foot chain link fence topped with concertina wire. So it feels like a prison no matter where you walk around. And then you have gateways between different sections so they can kind of protect or at least monitor who goes in and out of certain sections if there are young people or children in them. So you're walking through concentration camp. That's the only way I can really call it.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I can justify describing it as. I'm not trying to load that word with all the connotations that go along with it from Nazi times, but it simply is a concentration of people with limited access to facilities, limited access to water and food, with no prospects, and not being able to leave. So that's the reality.
And as you mentioned, with all of those different countries, all those different tribal groups all crammed into one place, there are disputes that arise. There are long, long-term rivalries, historic feuds that flare up when people are crammed into an uncomfortable place, are hot, are despairing, don't see what the future is going to be. people get grouchy. And when
desperation.
When people get grouchy, they get angry. And then all of those feuds come alive.
Now, the director of this camp happens to be somebody that's related to people that we work with.
Mm-hmm.
This camp, in fact, had been turned over by abdication to a NGO named Euro Relief, and that is the expression and outflow of the work that Conscience International does, and we've worked with them many, many times. So Dr. Jennings was over there with me to go see how his people were holding up. He knew that the pressure was coming and that funding was drying up from the EU and from the Greek government. By the time we got there, all of that funding had dried up. So these people are coming into the camp, and this NGO, started by the folks at Hellenic Ministries in Athens, and by the cooperation of Conscience International, this Euro Relief Group now had the entire camp under their responsibility.
Can't imagine.
Yeah. So Jeremy Holloman, who is the director of that, I asked him, how much pressure can these guys take before the thing blows up? He said, when do they have to move on to something else or have a hearing date or something before they lose hope? He said, if we don't get them answers in a 3-week window of saying what's coming next, after 21 days, they lose hope. They just don't care anymore, and they get angry.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked him how many people are in that window right now. I said, the people you see in here have been sitting here for months. Mm-hmm. We are a hair's breadth away from another insurrection out this camp. Mm-hmm. And they were having to move an entire group of African refugees out of one big tent area that they were familiar with and force them to move up the hill to some other barracks because they needed that big tent area for the incoming Syrian families that were arriving, and many, many young children were coming. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't have them mingling with each other, so they forced them to move up the hill. And that was very dangerous because there was plenty of suggestion that one of the groups of Eastern Congolese were running a prostitution ring and black market out of that tent, and they didn't want to give up their territory. So these Christian aid workers were having to figure out how to smooth this over enough to keep everybody safe and not have a riot.
We're needing the wisdom of
Solomon was definitely called for that day.
Exactly.
And of course, Jim Jennings, being the brave man he was, just moved right in, had conversations with everybody and kept people off their heels and just engaging. He spent half a day doing this to keep people talking and finding reasons to keep the riot police out of the compound, which were hanging out around the corner just in case they were needed.
He is amazing. God has gifted him just incredibly.
Yeah, he's a peacemaker, and that's what he's been doing for many, many years. So that was the situation we got poured into when we arrived on the island of Lesbos. And I say that was like two really intensive days finding out what the current situation is. And of course, we've been praying left and right for this thing. I don't know what the solution is going to be for Conscience International or for the team that's working in the camp, but I know that they're very prayerful, and God has honored their prayers, and that they've been very brave. And so far, it's holding.
Bram, do you know how many countries are still willing to accept refugees? I know that some have put a limit on it now and cut it off.
Many probably aren't taking any more active cases. But in fact, on the way back from our trip, after the second part of our journey, we'll talk about on another program, I happened to be flying back from Athens to Istanbul, and sitting next to me was a lady who looked very Syrian. I talked with her briefly, and she knew about 4 or 5 words of English. And she said, oh, my daughter speaks English. And so as soon as we got in the air, she went and grabbed her daughter from another part of the plane and made her come sit with me. And it was a beautiful young girl, about 16 years old. Her name was Rawan, and she was a Syrian refugee, and she had been in this process of getting moved through. Now, when her mother said she knew English, she did, but it wasn't something she knew before she left Syria. In fact, in the year that they'd been in the process of coming across to another refugee camp on another island and getting to the mainland and getting assigned asylum status and getting access to leave the country, it had been an entire year. It was almost a year to the day from the time they left the shore of Turkey that she was sitting on that airplane flying to Istanbul to fly out to Europe.
Mm.
And she had learned English, functional English, in 5 months.
Wow.
And that was just by studying with other refugees under some NGO volunteers in Athens. But she said, I'm very grateful that a country would accept us. And I asked her where she was going. They said, we're being sent to Holland. And she had no idea where Holland was.
No.
So we pulled out the map together and we studied the countries, and I explained where she was in relation to other countries and where I lived in America, in Texas. She'd heard of Texas before, but she was not geography knowledgeable. So I just explained to her what it's like to live in the far north, what would be different from living in the desert where she came from in eastern Syria. She was very excited for the opportunity, but still very nervous.
I would be, too.
And but those cases are drying up. The governments are accepting the ones that are in the pipeline right now, but they're shutting down quickly their acceptance of others coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows what will happen with the refugees that are currently in Moria camp there on Lesbos?
Oh, Bram, there's so much to say. There's so much that our people need to know. We are running out of time for today. Tell us the last few things you want to tell us here, and then we'll move on to tomorrow's program and pick it up from there. But what's on your heart about what you've told us today?
We'll talk a bit more about specific stories of people I met while we were in the camp. And we have interviews of those. The direct conversations we'll have with those refugees that I met personally will be on the air shortly. And I think it's going to move people to hear them talk about what it's like to actually have to do this route of walking across Asia to find one window of hope, to get out of the situation they're in and get away from the killing squads. They are very moving stories. The thing I would say right now is because the people that are serving there, especially in this camp in Lesbos, the Moria refugee camp, they're a cohort of Christians that are being pulled from all sectors. They've got Mennonites coming from Northeast America. You've got World Racers from AIM International who are sending youth volunteers that are young college grads. They're giving 3, 6, maybe even 12 months of their lives to serving in these camps. People are asking through the UN to come volunteer and work at that camp because they've heard of the reputation of the people who run it.
Mm.
Because Christ is there. And the people who are serving there love Jesus. And they have spiritual formation and development and Bible studies that they have for their staff. They pour into each other. They keep their hearts alive and full of joy. They are wellsprings of God's kind of peace. And the people that come and visit that know other camps around the world see that and they notice it. And they know that something's different here.
Mm-hmm.
And they find a spirit of peace that makes peace within the camp in ways that other camps can't pull together. So we have a lot to thank God for the people that are serving currently in the Moria camp there in eastern Lesbos. So we need to keep praying for them. So the folks at Euro Relief will find ways to work together and support them in the months to come. But for right now, let's focus on praying for them. As much as we're praying for other kind of disaster relief around the world, I know our plates are full in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
But our hearts should never be so full with our own needs or the people just around us that we forget our body around the world. The devil would love us to be completely bogged down with good and important things, so much so that we forget the body of Christ. So I'm urging you, don't forget these people, because they have to find a way forward. And I'm talking about the servants here, not just the people coming to the refugee camps. There are many Christians among them, too. But I'm saying we need not to forget those of the body who are serving those who suffer. So please lift up our friends at Euro Relief in the island of Lesbos in eastern Greece.
Bram, thank you for being our eyes and ears. We are certainly looking forward to hearing those firsthand stories in the days and weeks to come.
Thank you, Jimmy. Thank you, Cher, for beginning the conversation. I think we have a lot to talk about this month. I think it's going to be moving and motivating in a lot of ways that our listeners may not have expected this fall. Cher, I wanted to talk a little bit about this month's special project and the premium that goes with it. It's something we've never done before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've talked about handcrafted things being always appreciated by our givers and our partners in Compassion Radio. And this month's premium, Cher, is really special in that regard. It has a very specific Compassion Radio focus because it's made specifically for us. It's a bracelet that's hand-hammered by some of these artisans at Foray, the Friends of Refugees and Immigrants in St. Louis. It's a beautiful brass bracelet that's been hammered and woven with a cross symbol built right into the bracelet.
But the most important thing about it is the prayer reminder.
Mm-hmm.
To have something to remind you to pray for whatever the project is that month, I think is always important. But to have something lovely that you can have on every day, all day, and every time you see it, you can send up a sentence prayer or the project that you're believing in, I think is invaluable.
Yeah.
So then to know that it's been made specifically for Compassion Radio listeners by people who are working to make a good life for themselves here in America, but are people who are also hearing the gospel of Jesus Christ and applying that to their lives every day. That just has to make you smile or at least warm your heart every time you look at it.
We got to meet some of the artisans that, because of the ministry of Foray, have come to know Jesus personally. And now, of course, they build their business with a real big heart of gratitude that God brought them not just opportunity, but brought them a whole new family. And these artisans produce these beautiful bracelets just for us. We've asked them to actually include a cross in this particular brass bracelet, which is hammered and woven with a brass wire in this very unique way. And each one is a handcrafted item. We're looking for a gift of $25 or more to the 4-Ray Project through Compassion Radio this month. And supplies are limited, so if you'd like to get one of these, make sure you act early because they'll run out pretty soon.
Well, I really hope they do, Graham. I hope people are stimulated, first of all, to pray for the project, to give to Compassion Radio so that we can really bless this ministry. But also we'll really use this as a reminder what they participated in and what they want the Lord to bless.
Request your bracelet today when you call with your gift to 1-800-868-2478. That's toll free 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is Compassion Radio, Post Office Box 2770, Orange, California 92859. Or you can always access our safe and secure website at CompassionRadio.com. Again, that's CompassionRadio.com. Our phone number once more, 1-800-868-2478. I'm Jim Governale. Have a wonderful day in the Lord, and we'll see you again next time with more Compassion Radio.